Hello and welcome to the Matt Hummer podcast, episode 119. I'm Mo and you're Elle. How the hell are you, Elle?
I'm doing really well, thanks. We just had a massive thunderstorm here and I loved it.
Yeah, I think we inherited it from you because it just hit me about half an hour later and it was fucking awesome. I could hear Thor losing his shit outside and I loved it.
Love me good.
A good thunderstorm. Before we crack on, don't forget, everybody, you've still got about a week or so to pick up the latest issue of Metal Hammer. I'm talking about our special Paul Gray tribute to commemorate 10 years since we lost the great man, Slipknot's iconic bassist and vital founding member. Elle did a fantastic feature on that. It's still out now. You can still pick it up. It comes with some cool extra goodies as well. Loads of great stuff in there. So don't forget that you can pick that up in UK shops or online from tinyurl.com/buyhammer, and then we're unveiling our brand new issue next week. But in the meantime, yeah, go pick it up if you haven't yet. Man, what do you think of Download TV then? Let's just get on with this, because I think no one knew quite what to expect. It was supposed to be Download last weekend, and so Download put together this big kind of TV show slash documentary slash archive footage thing. And if nothing else, I think it just felt really nice to feel like everyone was watching something together. Do you know what I mean? Because we've had so little of that.
I definitely say that. Yeah, it was really nice. Like, we did a Zoom chat on Friday, didn't we? Mm. Us and Steve.
Steve, Louise. And
our art editor.
Someone else who doesn't work here now. No, we're made unnamed. But a few of us all jumped on a Zoom together and watched.
That was fun. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we were sick of each other, so we just watched it by ourselves. But I was following on Twitter, obviously, the hashtag Download TV, and actually we were WhatsApping as well when we were watching it. And it was cool. It was nice seeing everyone's reactions. And there were so many pictures and messages on Twitter and Instagram that I was scrolling through while the coverage was on, and so many people were sharing memories of past downloads, talking about the footage that I was seeing right then. And it did feel like everyone, apart from the pandemic, which is obviously the biggest participation event that we've had this year.
We're all taking part in the pandemic.
Yeah. Then it was the second biggest thing probably that I've participated in terms of shared communal experiences. And the fact that it was streamed all over the world as well meant that everybody could tune in and watch it. I think they had 20,000 people or so at one point. I'm not really sure of the numbers, but there were an awful lot of people watching it, and it was really nice, like, for everyone to have that feeling of being a bit like, oh, I'm a bit sad, you know, I should have been at Download this weekend, to then throw themselves into something where everyone was watching bits and reminiscing and stuff. It was a really nice feeling.
Yeah, it was really cool. So cool to see people like making little Download stages in their gardens and all this kind of stuff. Really shows you what this festival means to the metal and rock community in the UK. It was funny because we were all sat watching it on the Friday, and it kind of felt to me, and I suspect Elle agrees, that Friday felt like, I don't know if it was by chance or design or whatever, but it felt like it was finding its way a little bit, maybe because we didn't know quite what to expect. I think a lot of us thought they'd be like kind of interviewee, documentary kind of stuff during the day, and then the evening will be just all bands playing classic sets. But the evening was actually a mixture of Talking Head stuff, exclusive new interviews with bands, some bands doing brand new stream sets, some archive content. They had stuff with like people from the Download message board and fans who had done something special or meant something special to the festival. So it was a really weird kind of patchwork presentation, which maybe wasn't quite what we were expecting. And I think it took a little bit of a while for us to get our heads round, and we were kind of like, oh, this is a bit weird, because you're kind of having a few beers and you're ready to like just rock out to some Kiss, but then there's an interview, and then there's a bit of Lacuna Coil, and then there's some Motionless and White, and then there's another interview, and then there's this stuff. So that first day felt like we had to kind of get our heads around exactly what it was. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I was expecting, they'd put a schedule on the website, but it was very loose. I was expecting it to be more kind of scheduled, like you would have younger bands at the beginning of the evening, like you would on the small stages, and you've had older bands at the later end of the evening, and it would all be kind of archive footage from Download. And like you said, Merlin, it wasn't really like that. It seemed to be kind of the bands were in a slightly random order. Mm. Some songs were half shown, some songs were fully shown. Bands would kind of come back in and out. There'd maybe be a song from a band and then a song from the same band later on. So it was, at the beginning it was like trying to wrap your head around it a little bit. But I think after that, the overriding feeling was, it's really nice that there's something, and it's really nice that we remember what the community is like and what the festival is like.
Totally. I mean, to me, that I want to quickly shout out whoever it was on the YouTube comments as well that pointed out during my interview bit that it was a joke that the editor of Metal Hammer had to ask permission from his mum to go to a festival. I was fucking like 19 or something, all right? I wasn't talking about when I was actually the editor of Metal Hammer. It was like 13 years ago.
Leave me alone. Merlin, you can let go of the hate you've been holding on to for several days about that comment on YouTube. You can just let it go now.
There was some feistiness in that on those YouTube comments, wasn't there? It's like there's some stuff going on there. I was like, oh, guys, come on, let's all be friends.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff. Well, there was a lot of like download stuff as well. There was a lot of butt scratcher and things like that.
That was cool.
It was a little bit disappointing on the Friday, I think, like we were saying, not really knowing what to expect. It felt at times like a little bit of a letdown. A lot of people were yelling Deftones, Deftones, Deftones. And then we didn't get any Deftones till right until the end. I think it was two songs. And I think some people were expecting it would be, you know, like a full Deftones set and that kind of thing.
Totally.
Was that Friday, wasn't it? But then
Deftones was Friday, yeah.
But then when they did show Deftones, I was like, oh, it's Deftones, yeah. And then I was really excited.
And also, I think they showed like a Maiden song and a System song on the Friday as well. So I was a bit like, oh, is it like everything's on all days? Like, what's going on? And I don't know. I can imagine that trying to get all the rights signed off to show what they wanted to show could have been a nightmare. I don't know that. Like, someone from Download or Live Nation could clarify that, of course, because I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to that kind of stuff. But
knowing what we know about having to put together stuff for Hammer sometimes and CDs and that kind of thing, like rights issues can be a really big thing. So
yeah, exactly.
That's probably why not all the performances were from Download itself. There were some of Gojira at Red Rocks, which is incredible. I could watch that all day, every day.
Yeah, that was amazing. I'm really glad they included that because that was such a beautiful set. Red Rocks is just like, apart from Madison Square Garden, I've never had another venue where I've been like, I want to go there somehow, some way.
So badly. And Deftones, Gojira actually had that set up. If you're a fan, you'll probably know. A couple of weeks ago, they had it online for one day only. And it was such an amazing show, and it's cool to see that. And there are a couple of other bands that had submit their own footage. There was one, I can't remember which band it was now, one from the Underworld in London and some of the bits and pieces. And
was that Holding Absence?
Oh yeah, it was Holding Absence, yeah.
Or maybe Loathe might have done something, I can't remember. There was so much stuff, wasn't there?
Holding Absence were at the Underworld. And yeah, it was just, that was cool to see. Like, it didn't matter that it wasn't all from Download because it was still live music, and it was nice to have a mix as well.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny because, you know, so the Friday, as we said, we kind of got left a bit like, okay, that was interesting, you know. And we did get some Kiss at the end, and that was like, yeah, all right, I'm 10 beers in now, let's go. You know, so that felt good. But, you know, it was kind of like, oh, okay. And then knowing what to expect, for me, made the Saturday and Sunday way more fun. And to be honest, I actually thought the Saturday was fucking brrilliant because there was...
Wonder why you thought that.
Well, yeah, okay, fair enough. But even trying to be neutral from it, it just felt like it flowed better. It felt like it was structured more. Like you saw there was like a couple of Gojira songs and there were like three Killswitch songs and there was a couple of Mastodon songs, I think. And then near the end, you got like a good wedge of like five Alter Bridge sets. I mean, I'm not even the biggest Alter Bridge fan, but it felt like a proper build up to a festival, you know. And they still had like interviews and stuff to talk about here and there. It was cool. But then the main event of the weekend, they did an hour of Maiden stuff, of classic Maiden material. And what made it so good is that if they'd just been like, all right, here's Maiden, Run to the Hills, Number of the Beast, The Trooper, blah, 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 that would have been still great. But that still would have been great, I should say. But the songs they picked to show from Download across the years were so cool and so unexpected. They did like Children of the Damned, Phantom of the Opera, Blood Brothers, like all these really cool, slightly deeper cuts that actually had me like feeling like I was at a gig. You know, when a band plays a song you're not expecting, you're like, oh, no way. And I actually got a bit emotional at one point when they were playing Blood Brothers. It really kind of, maybe for the first time, properly hit home what we're all missing and what we're kind of, you know, not just live music, but that basic kind of connectivity between people. And yeah, I'm not afraid to say I had a little cry on my sofa watching Iron Maiden with a beer on Saturday night. But yeah, I thought the Saturday was way, way better and really kind of made me feel like I'd been part of some kind of festival experience. You know what I mean?
I liked the Disturbed set on the Sunday as well. It wasn't a set, but they had a couple of songs. They had an interview with David Draiman and they showed The Sound of Silence. He talks in the interview about how The Sound of Silence is really affecting, even though it's like loads of metalheads in a field, everyone kind of really appreciated it. And he talked about that particular moment, and then they showed that, and that was really nice. And you could see people getting like really, really like totally into it, and sort of everyone could remember that moment when they were there. So that was a cool one. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was cool. I thought, yeah, Sunday I thought was really good as well. I have to be honest, the System of a Down footage they showed on Sunday didn't make me gutted that I was missing them this year. They showed some of the older stuff where Serge used to really play around on the vocoder synthesizer stuff. And that, you know, when Serge had like his hair really grown out and stuff in the mid-2000s, like that was quite a cool era. So I quite enjoyed seeing some of that. And it was nice to see footage from the old downloads as well, just as a general aside, of the different layouts they had. Because when they had it, when it was like the left side of the stage was like a big hill, back in the original days, like it was really cool seeing that again, because I kind of almost had forgotten exactly how it looked. So that was nice.
And you had to go around the back of the stage to get to the smaller stages, and you had to sort of go up the bank sort of thing and like down the bank again and stuff and around it.
Yeah, it was really cool. And yeah, so I thought Sunday was good fun. I thought the Korn stuff was great. I loved that.
Oh, I loved that so much. It was so good. And they picked like Freak on a Leash and, oh, what did they pick from Issues that made me tweet about Issues? I can't remember which song now.
Falling Away From Me.
Yeah, that was great.
And Issues and Ladders as well, which is cool, where they showed the thing where Jonathan actually comes out with the bagpipes at the start of the set and all that.
So
that
good. Cool. I would have loved to have seen more of that. It's a shame there wasn't some kind of vote. I mean, again, there's probably like rights issues, but and it's too complex. But I would have loved it if there's like a voting system and you could like vote for your favourite songs and that kind of thing. That would be cool.
That would have been cool, actually. although I imagine we probably still would have got Freak on a Leash.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%.
I know Metallica are in the middle of a massive song tournament on Instagram. And it kind of reminds me of when they did the Pick Your Own Set. It's like, oh, well, I guess it's Nothing Else Matters and Enter Sandman in the final. You know, it's just so predictable. But yeah, I thought the Sunday was good fun as well. As I say, the system footage, man, some of those later sets, they did not look up to it, and I remember kind of thinking that at the time, but I still enjoyed and vibed with it. But yeah, System of a Down, that is a band that is in an interesting situation in recent years, and that's before we even start on all the shit John says, so we're not gonna go there today.
I really enjoyed the Radio and Rock Show special they did afterwards as well. Some of it was literally just songs by the bands, but it was just nice to hear them. You're like, oh, I like this band, I like this song, you know. Like, it was like a little after show party almost. Excellent. I made a chocolate cake and listened to it. It was very nice.
That's the Sunday dream. Shout out Daniel P. Carter, good friend and occasional contributor of the magazine. So yeah, well done, Download. Fair play. I can't imagine that was an easy thing to pull together. And just when it seemed at one point that it was like, well, I'm not totally sure this is clicking, they turned it into a really, really cool weekend where it really felt like everyone was united. And Lord knows we all need a bit of that right now.
And they raised money for NHS charities as well.
Yes, very well pointed out. Yeah, there was. You could donate throughout the whole thing. There were all little messages coming up showing you where you could donate to NHS charities. So all for a good cause as well, which is what it's all about. More unity needed. Loads of stuff. Speaking of unity, Machine Heads have a new single out of pretty much nowhere. What do we think of this? Machine Head featuring Jesse Leach, the one and only Jesse Leach, new single called Stop the Bleeding. It is inspired by the death of George Floyd. And it's one of two new Machine Head songs that are appearing on a digital single called Unrest. And the other song on the digital single is called Bulletproof. And that was another protest song. This one partly inspired by the murder of another unarmed black man, Ahmed Arbery, at the hands of white supremacists in February 2020. Heavy stuff from Rob Flynn here, which we probably shouldn't be too surprised by when we look at where he's come from and the stuff he's written about before.
Yeah, but I think he's got more and more incensed, really, and more and more is, I feel like he's turning into more and more of an activist. I'd be interested to talk to him about this, because I feel like he's become more and more outspoken. He's going to more protests. I've seen that he went to one in Sacramento recently, a Black Lives Matter protest. He released the song Bastards. You know, he's had a bit of pushback from his fan base who think he's being too kind of left-wing snowflake or whatever critics
want to call it. Political.
Yeah, so he's had quite a lot of pushback, but it's clearly stuff that is very important to him, because he's really run with it and he's really committing to showing the world that he is supportive of protest, he's supportive of the Black Lives Matter movement. He obviously wants to use his platform to make a change. And so this music feels very, it feels like, of course, it's something he's done, you know, it feels very kind of normal for what he's doing right now. But I think more and more and more as he's got older, he sort of wants to use his platform for change. So it's kind of interesting that he'll come out and just do something out of the blue. It's sort of expected and unexpected at the same time. You kind of expect that he's going to write this way, but it's unexpected when the songs just keep showing up and you're not expecting them. Mm. And I'm not sure how Jesse got involved on the song, but they obviously filmed the video together. They're both separate, but they're on like railway tracks and kind of screaming the lyrics. And I think it's cool they're putting music out at a time like this because, you know, there's an ongoing discussion in the sort of broader sphere about how even though arts and culture are generally sort of not always giving the funding needed or not always seen as essential services, at a time like this people are turning to arts and culture, and it's cool that they're producing music that people can listen to at a time like this.
Yeah, definitely. It's an interesting song as well, and I was trying to put my finger on what the track reminded me of, because it's got those big Machine Head moments in there. That breakdown, that big groovy breakdown in the middle, couldn't come from any other band. And I think Rob and Jesse just both sound great. Two of the greatest metal frontman ever. But it's kind of got this kind of, it's not even polished because it's been obviously thrown together a little roughly, but it's got this kind of like streamlined, like more simplistic, high octane vibe to it. And it actually, there's bits of the song that actually remind me of some Bullet for My Valentine tracks. And often if you say something like that in metal, that's like some big insult because Bullet. But I don't really mean it as an insult at all. I just think it sounds like a really simplistic, catchy metal song, which, I mean, Machine Head write catchy songs, but especially in recent years, a lot of their songs are more expansive and kind of rumble into all these different things and have tempo changes and like riffs flying in everywhere. Whereas this feels much more no nonsense, straight ahead. I mean, it's only about 3 and a bit minutes long or something, I think.
I'm going to come in with my expected but unexpected line again, because okay. I feel like maybe some of that stuff is unexpected, but if you look at Catharsis, then maybe it's very expected, because Catharsis feels like this very freewheeling album where Rob was like, no, I'm just going to do old school Machine Head. I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to like take off the stabilizers or whatever, wheel down the hill, have a good time, like do old school metal, and just go with it. And the stuff that he's released since as well has sounded like that to me. It just sounds like him just kind of going, fuck it, I'm just going to do what I want when I want and release it, and this is where I'm going with it. It feels very much like you know, unrestricted, like he's not thinking about how this applies necessarily to somebody else or whether he's got any sort of constraints. It's like, I want to do this, I'm just going to do it. And that sort of seems to be the vibe that he's in right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's a cool track, and I think it's Machine Head's, to kind of go on from what you're saying, Machine Head is such a vessel for Rob that it's like everything they put out is such an immediate insight into where he's at, isn't it? Like you can just see, like, I mean, I know it's always a band effort to some degree, but it always feels like it's reflecting of where he's at.
Totally.
And you know, I can see, I don't even want to say I can see why people complain. I acknowledge that people complain when bands get quote unquote political. Although for me, it is absolutely ridiculous to complain about Machine Head being political. Like, you listen to Burn My Eyes. That's just an insane thing to say. But you know, but we live in a time where a lot of people are needing support, and a lot of people need to stand up and try and make a difference. And Rob's doing that. And I have to applaud him for being unafraid to kind of put his head up there and just say, no, I'm speaking up about this, knowing full well that he might lose fans through it as well, which is not, you know, there might not be people he wants to keep as fans. I don't know, but.
Yeah, I think that's the thing as well. Not only that, but like not being afraid to do it, even if he gets things wrong, you know, he just kind of goes, if he does get things wrong, he's just kind of like, yeah, I got this wrong. Like he's very much unself-conscious about what he puts out, I think. But then he's willing to say whether, you know, he thinks something is a good idea or not, really.
Yeah, definitely. I think, that's really, really cool that he does that, because, you know, as the discourse around things like the Black Lives Matter movement and these awful deaths that we've seen in the States continues to progress, you know, a lot of people are learning about how to rethink how they talk about these things, and there's going to be mistakes made and all the rest of it. And it's really cool that Rob's willing to just say, you know, he might not always get it right, but he's always willing to stand up for what he believes in. What else has been going on this week, though? Did you see that? Did you see any footage of that Doro driving concert?
I did, yeah. It was crazy. Like, she's sort of going around singing for Emma and fist pumping and walking off the stage and walking towards cars. And all the people beside the cars are sort of like moshing next to their cars and trying to sort of interact with her, but like at, you know, 2 meters distance. And they're like, yeah, I'm really excited. And it's sort of this weird social distancing moshing at a gig with cars. But it looked really cool. They had like pyro, there were all these cars in the field. Also, the people they showed on the camera, I mean, they were at the front to be fair, but they looked so into it. And it's like, if you've not been to a gig for ages and then you just get to be at a gig, like that must be really cool.
Yeah, definitely. It's it must be a good feeling. I'm not sure that drive-in gigs will last beyond the kind of initial novelty. They're kind of like Zoom quizzes. It's like everyone's all about it at first, and then after a couple of weeks, it's like, oh, I don't want to do this again.
You get a bit fatigued. You're like, yeah, I want to see everybody, but do I want to stare at a screen for 3 hours again and answer some questions? Yeah. Do I want to drive all the way to a gig and then have to like stand by my car and just be with my car at all times? Like, it's better, you know. It's better than nothing, but it's not 100% ideal.
Yeah. I mean, I'm more like, if we can make them happen in the UK, let's do it. Cause a lot of us are definitely gagging to be able to find a way to do gigs by hook or crook somehow. What else?
Is that why you ever picked up driving again, Merlin?
I have. Yeah. I went out, I've drove my car. Well, it's not even my car, co-insured on my sister's car. Drove it around for the first time in 10 years yesterday. it was weird.
Not if we ever drive through a gig, then you're gonna have to drive. I'm gonna get in the back of the car.
Yeah, that's fine. Back of the car, put a mask on, we'll be good. I'm still staying safe. Tell us about this thing that Underside are doing, the brilliant Underside, who we've covered quite a lot in the magazine.
Yeah, so just briefly, in case people don't know who Underside are, they are a metal band from Nepal. Very sort of modern, slick sounding metal band. And they have a festival in Nepal called Silence. And they've set it up over many years to evolve into what it is now. And they gather together a lot of acts from Nepal and surrounding countries like India. And then they try and get like a big international headliner. So last year they had Testament. I actually went the year before that, I think it was, and I saw Cancer Bat's headline. And they really bring the community together, the metal community in Nepal, for this one big shared event, which gets people all excited and inspired about the scene. And it's an amazing experience having been there. It's just an incredible festival run by people who are super, super, super passionate, and some fantastic bands as well. So previously they've raised money for their country before. So in 2015 there was an earthquake and they raised some money to help rebuild houses that had come down during that earthquake, because Nepal suffered really, really badly. And even when I went there a few years later, you could see the damage. So they're always really keen to give back to their community as well as supporting the metal scene. And unfortunately, with the COVID-19 crisis, there's a huge problem with migrant laborers coming from India back into Nepal to try and basically help contain the virus. They're all kind of coming back from India into Nepal, trying to reach their villages. And obviously they don't want to, you know, spread the virus or any of that stuff. And everybody's, you know, trying their best to stay, you know, do social distancing and all that. But it's obviously very logistically difficult. And at the moment, there is a lot of people at the India-Nepal border who haven't got access to food and water, which is a really, really big problem. So they're raising money to try and get supplies down to these people who are coming back to their villages. And they've set up a website. It's called Metal for Nepal. And on there, they are selling t-shirts, they're selling prints, digital and physical, and they're doing an auction, and they've got a donation page. So I'd really go and check that out. Metal for Nepal, there's a website, there's a Facebook, there's an Instagram. And obviously a lot of people are doing funding campaigns at the moment. There are a huge amount of places you know, kind of in need of funds right now. But even if you can go on there and share that with other people and make people aware of it, that would be awesome too. So basically, it's just a huge fundraising effort to try and get some, just some simple food and water to people who are stranded at the border.
Wow. Yeah, that's a very, very important cause for sure. And yeah, as I said, you can, if you kind of look up Metal for Nepal, you can find it, or we've got some info on the Metal Hammer website as well. Rammstein have been working on new material in lockdown. I struggle to believe this headline is as legit as it first reads, to be honest.
Is it April Fool's Day? Is it actually April? Like, we haven't left the house for weeks. Maybe it's just April still.
Oh God, it feels like it could be, to be honest. Is it still April 1st or is it April 1st, 2021? I just don't know.
I don't know either.
Drummer Christoph Schneider told Radio Rodeo's The Boss Hoss Show, we still have so many ideas lying around, so many unfinished songs. We met and we're working on new songs. We want to work on songs, but whether it's going to be a new record, nobody knows. I struggle to believe Rammstein are going to have a new record out anytime soon, despite this.
I mean, maybe Christoph is like doing some stuff by himself, a bit like maybe, you know, Danny Carey from Tool is doing some stuff by himself. But the amount of people that are in that band, and even if it's lockdown, like they all have various families and responsibilities and side projects.
They each has various families.
Each of them has various families. But, you know, I could see if it was Richard Crusp working on some new material for his project, or if it was Till working on something for Lindemann. But I don't know. It's very hard to believe that all of Rammstein are getting on a Zoom chat and writing some new Rammstein material.
Could you imagine the Zoom backgrounds on a Rammstein Zoom chat?
Fire.
Gillies everywhere. Fire and cock.
Yeah. So, but it must be pretty weird. I mean, I had tickets to see them in like 3 days or something in Coventry.
Yeah, of course.
And our online editor of Classic Rock, Fraser, he texted me today with being sad he was meant to see them today in Belfast. So they were meant to bring over their whole massive production to the UK. So when you've built up that kind of momentum and got that all going on in your mind, it must be super, super weird to then stop and have nothing. But I'm very skeptical about new material.
Yeah. Although, hey, if anybody could ever prove us wrong and do something unexpected, it's those lads.
How good would it be if after 10 years, like the first album in 10 years, there's like nothing, and then they just released a bunch of songs like this year or something? It'd be so
honestly,
good.
Honestly, that would be so cool. It's very difficult for a band like Rammstein to do that, but fuck me, that would be so great if they did that. One band that definitely do have something new coming out, or at least a new release, is Metallica. Lars Ulrich confirmed on Jimmy Kimmel Live that they are releasing the much anticipated, and I think we've probably thought inevitable, S&M 2 box set. It's going to come later this year. He did a really cool thing. I don't know if you saw it, but he did a really cool thing on Jimmy Kimmel Live when he surprised a health worker who's a massive Metallica fan.
I did see that. Yeah,
absolutely love it. And yeah, he also kind of almost like unofficially announced, or surely it's officially announced if Lars Ulrich says it. But he says there's an S&M 2 thing coming anyway. But I'm very excited about that. Having been lucky enough to go, I don't know if I've mentioned before.
Tell us all, Merlin. I've never heard about it.
I spent about 8 hours reviewing it. Just one of the best gigs I have ever been to, and very excited to be able to relive it all over again. We'll have much more on that in due course, I am sure. Right, it's a big one for Album of the Week this week, and it is well overdue in many ways, because it is an album that was supposed to be out, I think, at least a couple of months ago now. We did a cover on it. And then the album got pushed back, but it is finally out this Friday. I'm, of course, talking about the self-titled album from the one and only Lamb of God. What do you think about where Lamb of God have been on the last couple of records? Obviously, we know that if you take the last 10 years, the big thing is, of course, Randy's situation in Prague. But in terms of musical output, where do you kind of think about where they're at heading into this record?
It's a hard one, isn't it? Because it feels like the stuff they've put out has had some real moments of brilliance and has been really cool. But it's been very Lamb of God as well. So if you like Lamb of God, you'll like it, and that's great. If you don't like Lamb of God, you're probably not going to come in the door and listen to Lamb of God. So it seems more like, I don't know, I mean, we were just talking about Machine Head, and they obviously did that thing where they decided not to play any more festivals or do support slots, and they're just going to have their own headlining shows and like play for 2 or 3 hours or something. It feels almost like Lamb of God now are, we are Lamb of God and we have Lamb of God fans and we do Lamb of God stuff. It seems kind of more focused on that, if that makes any kind of sense.
No, I totally agree. It's weird to think that if you discount Legion, the Burn the Priest thingy they did, Lamb of God have only put out before now 2 new albums of original material in the last 10 years, which is not very prolific. And they're totally at the stage of their career where they could do that, which is fine. But not only is this their first proper album in 5 years, but of course it's their first album since Chris Adler departed, first album with Art Cruz officially on drums. So I think there's a lot riding on this in terms of whether, you know, they can kind of propel themselves into this next chapter of their career. And, you know, kind of going into what you said, I've listened to this album a few times now. I have to say, we got it through a few weeks back. In fact, we were still in the office when we got this.
We were still in the office. I was thinking it was a really long time ago. It's probably like 3 or 4 months or something at this point.
That's crazy. And to be honest, because, you know, the Code Orange album was on and the Trivium album was on and the Kvelertak album was on, I listened to this album a couple of times and I didn't really go back to it, which I don't think is an amazing initial sign of a Lamb of God album, because of what you just said, Al. It was like, yeah, this is Lamb of God and it's really good. And hooray for Lamb of God, because they are one of the best metal bands ever and this is them doing what they do. But I have to say, since I've come back to it, I find myself liking it more and more every time I go back. And actually now, there's some fucking great stuff on this record. And I've been really, really enjoying it. I mean, if you just kind of take it from the top, I know a lot of the singles are obviously out there already. I love the first track. I just think it's fucking monstrously good. I mean, when I first heard that song, I was like, oh, this album's going to be amazing. And then at first I thought maybe the rest of the record wasn't going to live up to it. But what's it called? Memento Mori. Sorry, my mind went blank. Memento Mori, the first track, I think is absolutely just as good as Lamb of God get. Fast-paced, angry, urgent, groove-heavy, just ferocious track. Absolutely love that.
I love him doing that spoken word stuff as well, almost like spoken word poetry at the beginning and having the children's voice whispering in. Like, it gives it so much more atmosphere than if it was just like a straight up banger.
Yeah, definitely. It just builds and builds and builds so that when you finally get that release of like riffs, it's just so, so good. I think Gears as well is a massive tune, really anthemic, really cool. I think you really hear Art's impact on the band come in after the first couple of tracks as well, like Reality Path, I think it's a really big tune. And like Art's drumming on that is just magnificent. Just like full on machine gun, relentless blast beats and all sorts of shit going on. Really, really cool. He does some interesting stuff in New Colossal Hate. This kind of off kilter, almost like polyrhythmic kind of things going on there, which I really like. And then also you've got these big sweeping riffs. I love the kind of breaks into like thrash metal that this track has as well. I think that's a kind of common thread with Lamb of God a lot of the time. They kind of go into these big thrashy bits. And then from then on in, there's just loads of other little bits and bobs that I really enjoyed, to be honest. We know about the Chuck Billy track Roots because that was released already, but I think that's a really good song. I love how Chuck Billy sounds kind of almost like ethereal, weird kind of spiritually presence hanging over the song, the way they've like put him on there. Powerhouse drums from Art again on that track. I love the blast beats that smash through the verses, all these cowbell things going on in the background. It just feels like there's so much going on in the drumming, and I don't know if that's because Art feels like he's got a point to prove, but it feels like he's really digging deep and just throwing everything out there on this track, which is great. What did you think of Jamie Jaster's cameo on Resurrection Man?
I thought, that's Jamie Jaster. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I really have a strong opinion on it. I just kind of thought, oh yeah, that's Jamie Jaster. I knew he was on one of the songs that he is being Jamie Jaster. That song is like really heavy, aggressive song. Like it comes in and Randy just does a bleh, like straight off the bat.
Yeah, that's
the first thing you hear is just a bleh. And then it's got like
that. Sorry, it's Poison Dream that Jamie Jaster's on, that Resurrection Man.
Okay, well, that I've got that wrong, then I was just looking at my notes for the Resurrection Man and talking about that song instead. So
it was me. I said it. I threw the whole thing, of course. No, Poison Dream has Jamie Jaster.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that still stands. I just kind of thought that was Jamie Jaster. But if we're going to talk about the Resurrection Man, I liked Randy's Blair at the beginning and the beat down at the end. I thought they were really awesome.
Yeah, that was really, really cool. The little Blair thing is great. I really love a good Blair. I love Jamie's bit in Poison Dream, because I just think it's so funny how this is this kind of, again, it's like relentless riff filled kind of scattershot drums going thrown around everywhere, like ferocious performance from Randy, and then it just breaks down for Jamie's bit into the most kind of like basic, like thuggish hardcore breakdown that you could possibly wish for. It's so perfect.
It's so unmistakably him. You're just like, yeah, that's happening, that's the thing.
Yeah, it's great. But it's so like, you can almost picture him like kind of swinging his way into the studio or something. You know what I mean? Like, because it's just so well done the way he comes flying in. Absolutely love that. I really love the clean vocals on Bloodshot Eyes as well. I thought that was really interesting. Something a bit like, something that Randy's played with before, but something that, I assume it's Randy anyway doing it. Something that he's played with before, but something that really sounds really different and adds on a nice subtle extra layer. I think really works. The groove on Bloodshot Eyes is just so big. It's just really carries the rest of the album through. I think On the Hook's not a bad track to finish on as well, but I really feel like the album comes to life, especially in that kind of, I guess, almost like middle third, you could maybe say, where things really, really kick off. As I say, every time I listen to this album, I like it more and more. I probably wouldn't have been speaking super flatteringly of it if we were doing this review, you know, after listening to it a couple of times 2 months ago. But now I think there's so much to unwrap with it, and I think once you really kind of start to dig into Art's performance as well on drums, you really appreciate what he's doing.
I thought you'd finished, Merlin.
No, go on.
I was just gonna say, can I please do Lyric Corner? It was,
yes, please do.
So I had a similar reaction to you when I first heard it. It was sort of listening to it around the time of other things. There was a lot going on. I thought, yeah, it's cool, it's Lamb of God. And then coming back to it, like you said, there's so much more. And it's really weird now because you can't help but reframe everything in terms of the pandemic and everything that the world has gone through and all the unrest. And obviously Randy's talking about loads of unrest that had already been happening in the world, but it just feels so much more vital now, and so much more angry, and so much more of a need. Like, you know, he's talking about waking up and basically just how our actions are killing innocent people. And we spoke about that in the cover feature, you know. We did the cover feature with Randy. Kim Kelly went out to Richmond, wasn't it, to speak to him.
I believe you can read that online now.
You can read that online. Cool. So there's a ton of stuff in there talking about kind of the politics behind it, but it's just so, it's, you don't want to say it's almost like, it would be really trite to say like he predicted what is happening now, because shit has been going on through the ages and it just wouldn't be correct to say it. But when you are listening to something in a different context to how you're listening to it 3 months ago, it does become more urgent, it does become more aggressive, it does become more prescient, it does become like more of a wake-up call and the soundtrack to chaos and all that kind of stuff. And it feels really like heavy.
Yeah. It's really heavy. It sounds like a weird thing to say about a Lamb of God album, but yeah, I know what you mean. It's heavy in a slightly different way. I mean, obviously with Sturm und Drang, it was the first album they'd put out since Randy's Issues in Prague, I think, wasn't it? So I think
it was because it had the one about his room number, with the five in. Yeah. Forgive my terrible memory.
And I think it was interesting because people were kind of expecting a certain type of introspection on that album, maybe a more personal thing. And now he's obviously so clearly just taking aim at the, I mean, absolute state that the world is in at the moment. And yet, as you say, this was all written before a lot of the stuff that's going on right now was happening. I mean, when we interviewed Randy Blythe, we went over and interviewed him. It was pre-lockdown. It was pre the explosion of the Black Lives Matter movement. And yet, yeah, it all feels so relevant now. And
512, that's the song I was thinking of, because that was his that was the number on his prison door, basically, wasn't it, that song? And
yeah, totally.
Yeah, but I mean, even on that record, he didn't write the whole record about that experience, and he was quite explicit saying that he wasn't going to do that. But you know, he's very tapped into these things. He's very aware of what happens around the world and injustice, and so obviously it's very, again, it's not that surprising he'd write a record like this, but it sounds really hard hitting now.
Yeah, definitely. And it really works, and it definitely adds some more gravitas to the album, which I think is a great album. I definitely like it a lot more than Sturm und Drang overall. I'm not sure I like it more than Resolution, which I think is a very underrated record in Lamb of God's overall catalogue. I think that deserves a bit more recognition than maybe it gets. But I definitely think it shows a step of forward momentum. And what a brilliant fucking band, basically. No one does it like them, and no one does it quite like them. I mean, I said, didn't I, earlier on in the year, that the Bleed From Within album really plugs that gap. And I feel like that album is still giving Lamb of God a really good run for their money with this record. But, you know, you can never have too much good metal, so that's good with me.
I feel like this record's more nuanced in a really heavy, budgeting way. Like you said, there's lots and lots of little things going on in this. And there's more to discover than you think at the beginning.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So if you're going to check this out, I'm sure most people listening to this podcast will be checking out a new Lamb of God album. Give it a few spins and let us know what you think over on the Metal Hammer Read This group, because we both found it was a grower, which is, you know, not something I normally say about Lamb of God records. So I'll be interested to see if you guys feel the same way. And speaking of the lovely readers group, facebook.com/Metal Hammer Readers. We're going to take some questions from there. Should we take this first one, Al?
Yes, I'll do a question. Kevin Tobin asks, how do you think last week's Download Webfest went? How would you like to see the Webfest format improve and reach out to a wider audience?
Well, you can hear how we thought by rewinding about 40 minutes on this podcast. So that's a good start.
A wider audience, I don't know if you can get much wider than a Download audience in terms of heavy music. Like, the people that go to Download are across the musical spectrum, and the Webfest was all around the world, so I think you'd struggle to build on that. But I think you could definitely tweak the format and play with that, and sort of, you know, it's all early days for this stuff, isn't it? It's all early days for web festivals and live streaming, and we'll look back on this in 10 years and be like, oh, that was weird when we weren't used to doing all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, the format, I think, you know, I would like to see something that felt a bit more structured, so that it kind of made sense why certain things were going in certain places. I mean, I guess it's different when you're relying on a viewership, because you don't want to just have no one tune in for the first bit and then everyone tunes in for the end. But I think it would be cool to have at least a couple of hours where it's nothing but music.
Yeah, I would have liked a little bit more curation and a little bit more scheduling. And like you said, you know, I get that if you're too specific with the scheduling, maybe people won't tune in and watch the whole thing, because they'll literally pick the bit they want. So it has to be a bit vague. But yeah, more of sort of a little bit of a flow in the content and what you can expect.
And 2 hours of Maiden next time.
Sam Welch, Deftones, Disturbed.
Yeah, exactly. Sam Welch asks, standard day after Download question. Who will be your headliners for 2021? Oh, and plus follow-on question. It's getting cheekier. Who are the possible future Metal Hammer cover star? And then he puts in brackets, we won't hold you to this.
Well, that's good to know. It's not legally binding.
Not legally binding. And, you know, I'm glad he's recognising that me saying I would like to put X Band on the cover doesn't mean we can just suddenly do it, and it's as easy as that. Who would you have Download? Let's see. Who would we like to see at Download next year if we're fantasy booking? There's probably a good chance we might see at least one of this year's headliners, I guess. Just because many bands will face that.
Yeah. So the headliners were Kiss and Iron Maiden and
System.
Hmm.
Maiden, I think, have said they're not doing any festival dates next year, so we know they're not playing.
Well, I would like, this won't happen because they've got their own headline shows, but I'm going to see Rammstein at their rescheduled date. It'd be really cool if they just snuck in another show the week before and were like, hey, we'll do Download. But it's very, very unlikely given the logistics of their setup. But, you know, if we're talking fantasy bookings, I'd like to see them twice in 1 week. That would be a good fantasy booking.
I'd back that.
We spoke before about Ghost and whether they can sort of step up. That's cool. That'll be good. Gojira at Red Rocks, honestly, so good. I would love to see Gojira headlining Download. I would love that so much.
That's a lot of heavy lifting that Rammstein's doing on that bill.
Oh, is it a bill? I thought these were just headliners we wanted.
No, well, no, that's what I mean. That's three headliners. If you've got three headliners,
oh, right,
that's a lot of heavy lifting on Rammstein.
Yeah.
Well, much as I love Gojira and Ghost, of course.
Or maybe you'd have to just stick Metallica in there and then have Gojira playing underneath or something.
Yeah, that's cool. I was going to say Ghost as well. I don't feel like it's necessarily quite their time to headline, to be honest, because I don't feel like they've broken through in a way that, you know, Avenged did at one point and Slipknot did before them, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not sure they're quite there yet. But to be honest, you know, they can play arenas now. They've got a new papa. The next era is going to be really interesting. Maybe it's one for the Download after, like the end of that album, next album cycle. But if I was just booking a random thing, I'd probably book Metallica doing the worldwide set. It would be really cool if they could find a way to bring that M&A set to Download. That would be awesome.
Okay. So
I'd probably pick them, Ghost, and... if I was balancing it out, I'd probably book someone like My Chemical Romance, but that's a big booking because, as we now know, they can sell out like 80 stadiums in a row. So that's probably not an easy booking.
Here's one. Slipknot, 20th anniversary of Iowa.
I would watch the shit out of that.
I mean, that would be perfect.
Amazing. They all have masks that reference the Iowa masks as well. How cool would that be?
That would be really cool.
They all come on and Corey's got that kind of, like that OG mask with the dreads pulled through. Fuck yeah, that'd be awesome.
They must have a mask archive where they keep all their masks, surely.
I mean, I dare say they can afford to make new ones, but... Like, I think it'd be cool
rub some pig's blood on them or something just to make it look like they're old.
Yeah, exactly. Easy. Yeah, that'd be cool. That's a great shout. I'd love to see that. Who else haven't we had? I mean, I'd love, you know, I'm not even a big Foo Fighters fan really, but it'd be cool to see someone like Foo Fighters get a shot. And you know, Andy did say in his interview on Download TV that, you know, bands like Foo Fighters and Green Day, he'd like to see it Download. So I know it's on the agenda, and I feel like it would add a bit of a different vibe, which would be quite cool. But yeah, that's some of our ideas. Feel free to steal them or not, Download. Do you want to do the next one?
We didn't answer about the cover stars, but I'm not sure I've
got... Oh, yeah, we didn't.
I'm not sure I've got any good ones.
No, I'm happy to do this. I'll tell you right now that, like...
These are all artists
that I would like to be able to put on the cover of Metal Hammer.
I know number one.
Go on.
I think you're going to say Code Orange.
I am going to say Code Orange. we wanted to do it. We've actually had Jamie on the cover, so we've kind of done Code Orange on the cover. But, yeah, we want to do a Code Orange cover at some point. Full transparency, it's when you're a monthly magazine, it's not as easy as just bunging a young band on the cover and hoping for the best. You will see a drop in sales. You do have to navigate around that. So a lot of things have to slot into place there. But yeah, I'd love to put Code Orange on the cover. I mean, one day, and this is quite far down the line, I imagine, I would love to do a Twin Temple cover. I think that band genuinely have serious potential. Again, they are nowhere near where Code Orange are at in terms of hype and stature and all the rest of it, but in terms of like just seeing a band and thinking, fuck me, imagine the cover we could do with them, that would be cool. I'd love to do a Carpenter Brute cover, do you know what I mean?
Like, oh, I'd love that. The colors and the artwork and stuff would just be so good.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we've had Gojira on the cover before, but I still feel like they're kind of fresh in the cover debate. I'd love to do them. I'd love to do Architects again. Man, I mean, there's so many great bands that I'd like to put on the cover, but it's getting them up to that level that that really counts. You know, there's someone else as well that I always have in mind, and I've forgotten who it is. I can't remember now. That's annoying. I mean, if I was just picking bands that I should just say as well, this is in relation to Download TV, if there was one band that I came out of Download TV being like, God, I love them so much, is Baroness, because I thought their streams acoustic set they did was amazing, and then just like flowing it straight into the highlights of their previous Download set. I spent the whole next day listening to Baroness. I would love to do a Baroness cover one day because they are a magnificent band. I'd love to find a way to make that work as well. And there's others. There's plenty others, but it's a long old process, isn't it?
Hmm.
Andy Paul asks, I've been reading my old 90s issues of Metal Hammer, getting nostalgic at memories of sitting in the supermarket, reading it after purchasing while my parents did their shopping. That's great. I love the fact that his parents would buy him a magazine, sit him in the corner, and then go do the shopping. And it got me thinking, what memories do you have of the mag pre-working for it?
Well, my main memory of the mag pre-working for it was when I was 18. I entered a competition on the very new Metal Hammer website to go and review the band The Berserker, the Australian grindcore band. And it was a music journalism competition. So somebody would go to every date of the tour and review it. And then the magazine would print the winning review. And that's like the competition prize, basically. And I was obviously like, I really wanted to be a music journalist. And I was already writing for like local magazines and the uni paper and stuff. So I went along to the Berserker, knowing nothing about grindcore, let alone Australian grindcore, and went and reviewed them. And that was a very interesting experience. I had never had Jägermeister before, and the tour was sponsored by Jägermeister. So the first thing that happened is I went backstage into the band's dressing room and they gave me Jägermeister, and I tried to drink it and I had a coughing fit. So that was really rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
And one of the bands supporting was actually a band featuring a music publicist we work with all the time now, Adam Segir. That was his band Lab Rat back then. So I met him and some other people I'm still friends with. And it was just mad. Like, if you've never heard the Berserker, like, go listen to them. It is, it's like I said, it's Australian grindcore. And at one point they had the fastest drummer in the world as well. So it was pretty much like just this onslaught. And I only really knew about nu metal at this point. So I was like, wow, this is pretty extreme. And yeah, so I won the competition and got my review in the magazine. And the way I found out was going to the newsagents, picking up the magazine, looking inside and seeing it in there. So that was really nice. And that was...
Lo and behold, now you have to contribute to the magazine.
Lo and behold, now I am bound to it legally.
Now you are contractually obliged.
That's awesome. My biggest Hammer memory. So
that's really cool. I mean, as you did, I've read Metal Hammer religiously growing up from the age of about 14 or 15. I can't remember quite when. I was a huge, huge fan of it. And I did actually get into the magazine twice as well in the letters section. In 2003, believe it or not, when they were interviewing AFI on the on Sing the Sorrow, one of the greatest albums ever made, I sent in a question, and rather than answer the question, they printed. I used to post on the message board basically, and they used to come in and go, "Oh, has anyone got any questions for this band?" And I put mine in, so they posed it, and rather than AFI answering my question, they all took the piss out of my name and called me a witch. Cheers.
You're a witch. Surely it's a wizard.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought. They were like, "Oh, he's a witch." Ooh. And I was like, cheers. Cheers. Cheers, lads.
Well, they should have said wizard. They should have apologized for getting that wrong.
They should. I got the laugh because now I decide if you get in. And you do because you're one of my favorite bands. And I got it another time as well because I took the piss out of Bullet for My Valentine for wearing three-quarter length shorts, and they printed it in a Spanish Inquisition. And then they took the piss out of me as well.
But I think I've seen you wearing three-quarter length shorts.
I don't own any three-quarter length shorts.
Just knee-length ones.
Just good old-fashioned. I mean, I've got slightly longer ones, but I don't have any like that.
Not, yeah, there's a difference between knee-length and sort of cropped ankle length.
Yeah, I was never about that life. I was, no, never, 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 never. anyway, I got nothing against Bullet. I was just being a cocky little twat on the internet and I got called out for it. So there you go.
Not much changes.
And now here we are. Here we are. But we're OGs and we made it, God damn it. And we're keeping going. One more question.
Alistair Belling asks, what are some of the best live DVDs that don't get talked about enough, i.e. Metallica's Cunning Stunts, etc.?
Cunning Stunts is a classic. I actually have most of the Metallica live sets that they've released in the last 10 years or so. And I really enjoy all of them. I think Metallica are one of those bands, Maiden as well actually, where even though they release DVDs for pretty much every tour. I just feel like they're always a really interesting look inside where the band was at the time and the songs they're playing and the set list and the show. So I'll play pretty much any. There is no Metallica or Maiden live show that I can put on and not enjoy. So it's impossible for me.
Yeah, I failed on this question because I meant to go in the other room and look at the bookcase and look at all the different DVDs I've got in there and then pick one, but I just didn't. So I
just say Rammstein again, Al. I know what you're going to say.
The Rammstein one I actually have out because I was using that for research not long ago, or one of the Rammstein ones. Yeah, obviously, like, I've talked about it before, I love the Jonas Åkerlund one, the Rammstein one that's just really interestingly shot. They just, like, do it really dramatically. The Retinal Circus, Devin Townsend. I went to Norway earlier this year, I think. Yeah, March. Seems like forever. I went to Nesblod, which used to be Hell, that's obviously the famous black metal get together shop with the basement, the infamous basement. And they've got like a whole section at the back that was really interesting. It's like a little trip down memory lane. It had a load of 90s and early 2000s DVDs, loads of like Century Media and Earache stuff. And there's so many things you just forget about from that era because that was a time when like DVDs were newer. And if you wanted to watch something, you didn't have the internet and you just pulled out a DVD. And I wish I could remember some of the titles, but it was old, like, yeah, just really old Lacuna Coil stuff or like Arch Enemy stuff. It's, yeah, there was some really good stuff in there. So if you happen to go to Norway, whenever planes come back, definitely go and look in there.
Come back, planes. We forgive you. cool. Excellent shout. And yeah, I was annoyed because I went to Norway around the same time you did and I didn't know that that store was only open certain days. So I fucked it and couldn't go. Boo!
Oh, you got to get your picture in the basement pretending that you're forming a black metal band.
Yeah, exactly. Pretending that I'm totally metal enough to do that. That is it for this week's show, everybody. We're going to do another Metal Hammer Podcast Hall of Fame next week. Many of you in the readers group may have already seen what the band is. It is Killswitch Engage. I don't think it's a massive spoiler to say it, looking at the voting and where it's gone. It's going to be between Alive or Just Breathe In and The End of Heartache. I think that might be the most hotly contested album face-off we've done so far. Thoughts, Al?
I actually don't know what you're going to pick, which is interesting because we haven't discussed it. And so I don't actually know which one you're going to go for. So I'm kind of curious. We can just not discuss it until it happens and then we won't be surprised by each other.
Because I know what I'm going to pick and Steve Hill's going to come in and do it with us and I know what he's going to pick. So I'm just saying there might be a chance that you might have to have the deciding pick.
Why do you always do this to me? But, you know, maybe I already know what I'm going to pick.
Ooh, well, we'll find out next week. It's a big one. Killswitch Engage, Hall of Fame on next week's show. In the meantime, have a wonderful time, everybody, in whatever way you are able to. And happy birthday for Friday, Elle.
Oh, thanks, Mel.
No problem. Everyone send Elle happy birthday messages on Twitter. She just got over 4,000. Yeah. See you next week.
Bye.